Here at Bookstuck Online, we're going to revisit a time in Compton that wasn't that great. But you have guys who were there and the woman who actually documents it next.
This is Book Circle Online, featuring in-depth discussion, insight, news, and commentary on all the world's leading book titles and their authors. And now, Book Circle Online.
When I was young, me and my mama had beef. Recent Hall of Fame, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, Tupac. He just made it in. Snoop Dogg did a really great tribute to him on the show. And, of course, he's part of the subject of this book that we're going to be talking about today. So we're going to tie it all together. And yesterday was Mother's Day. So all mothers, hey, Mother's Day. To my mom, grandma, everybody. My daughter, who's a mother, to my grandchildren. Hey, Mother's Day to all you guys. I'm James Knight Jr. here on Bookstuck Online. I like to bring you guys diverse topics and books here on this network. And this is a good one. I read this book in 2 days. I couldn't put it down. I seriously cannot put it down. It reads like a novel. But it's actually, this is real life stuff. And it's called Once Upon a Time in Compton, From Gangster Rap to Gang Wars, The Murders of Tupac and Biggie. This is the story from two men who were the center of it all. We're going to cover as much as we can. But I want you to run out and get this book. I want you to read it and you see what's going on back then. I'm from that area, so from that time period, so we're going to talk about all of that also. So I'm so excited. First thing next to me is the woman who for 4 years was documenting, doing this whole thing, writing it, and talking to them, and doing this. And she has many books out too. I saw your list of books. Like, girl, you're really good. Screenwriter, producer, member of PEN, which is the world's oldest and leading human rights international literary organization. I like that. Lolita Files. I missed your name already. Lolita Files. How are you?
I'm great.
So, I mean, PEN, I'm like, that's really, I've never heard of it. It's really interesting.
Oh, yeah, PEN's a very big international organization. Yeah.
I like that. And the two police officer detectives who were actually part of this whole thing, it's their story, and it's so compelling. We have Bobby Lassing next to Lolita, and we have Timothy Brennan next to Robert. Bobby.
Thanks Bobby for having us on, James.
Yes.
My pleasure. Same. So, what I want to start out with first, like I said, the book is really good. It is completely, you read it, and you're just like, you're enthralled. It reads like it's a fiction story, but this is all for real.
Yeah.
And for me, I found that it was like three parts to it, and it's kind of how I divided it. There was your story, Tim and Bobby's story, kind of coming up and being in, and becoming the training and all the development and all stuff. Then of course the death of Tupac and Biggie, that was part of it, and then like the later stuff, the law enforcement stuff that kind of went on. And the first question I want to ask you guys. Were you afraid to say anything? Were you just like, we're gonna put it all out? Because you guys are very real in this book about yourselves, other people. Was there any trepidation of just like letting it all out?
No, we really wanted to tell the people. We think it was our adventure through the 80s and 90s when it was a crazy time when Compton was considered probably the most dangerous city in America. And people were running around with AK-47s, and we had murders every night, and it was a rough place to work, and we really wanted to tell it how it was, or what it was like.
Yeah, so, Sam, for you, just like, let's get it out?
Yeah, I mean, we felt like it was like a story that has never been told in the city of Compton. Bits and pieces have been told over the years with Death Row and NWA and Tupac's murder, Biggie Smalls. However, we wanted to show that it, you know, the city, the citizens, and what they went through every day on a day-to-day basis, the people that lived there and tried to survive in that everything that was going on at that time.
Yeah, my grandmother had a house on Rosecrans and Keene, so I used to always go there all the time. And I'm from Inglewood. So, I mean, I was that whole South and South L.A. area, I was back and forth all the time. And I remember how there were parts of the schools which I couldn't go to because of the gangs. Certain colors I couldn't wear because of the gangs. Certain shoelaces I couldn't wear. It really, people sometimes don't understand. It was really, in the 80s and in the early 90s, it was really bad. Like, it was really, really bad. And you guys were, like, policing the beat at that time. And so, I mean, when you went into police, did you imagine you would be in a situation where it was like that? Like, it was war, basically.
It was. I mean, I didn't. I grew up in Orange County, in California, right?
Yeah.
Although I had some contacts in Compton before that. Yeah. I worked at a liquor store there. But when I first came into Compton, I couldn't believe that this was going on 30 minutes away from where I live.
Yeah, is that crazy?
And you never heard it on the news. You never heard anything about it.
So down there, you didn't really hear anything that was going up here then?
No.
Interesting. No. Hmm. I could make my own predictions about why that happened. So seriously, so you're like, I didn't really know much was going on oh my goodness, here it is.
Right. I didn't realize how violent the place was, mm-hmm. you know, until I actually had to work there.
Wow. And I think Tim was drawn to it because of that.
Ooh. I kind of was. I mean, I had a lot of family members from Chicago police. I came from Chicago area out here about a year before I got hired. Yeah. And I wanted to be a cop basically in Chicago, and I just couldn't handle the snow anymore. Great city, but great city. Snow,
love the city.
Snow and cold kind of did me in. Yes. And yes. when I got out here, and I ended up running out of money and settling in Long Beach, California, because it looked like a nice place on the map. And then I happened to read the newspapers every day, the local Long Beach paper, and they had a lot of news about the city of Compton in there, about the violence that was going on there. And I knew I wanted to be a cop, and I wanted to be a cop somewhere where you had real challenges and you had nonstop work to do. And I was lucky enough to be hired by the Compton Police Department, that to me was the greatest place to work at the greatest time.
Well, we're gonna talk more about that as we talk about more of the hour. And how'd you get involved in the story?
My entertainment attorney at the time introduced me to Tim and Bobby. And I was told, you know, they've been involved with the Tupac and Biggie murder cases. And I love hip-hop, you know, love hip-hop.
Yeah.
And the whole culture of hip-hop. And so that was a draw, but it ended up not being the total draw, because as I talked to them and learned that they had been there, you know, when they came into the Compton PD, and then that they, you know, known NWA when they were selling tapes out of their trunks, and then the whole thing with DJ Quick with the song that he made about Tim, and then them being front and center with the LA riots, and then the Tupac and Biggie thing, and then the fall of the Compton Police Department.
Yes.
It was just one hit after another. Wow. Like, this was just, each thing on its own was an eye popper.
Yes,
then you had it stacked, and then I learned that the Compton Police Department had gone away, and I'm like, where does this happen? The mayor had shut the police department down, and so that in and of itself was crazy. Yeah. And so I was like, okay, I think I want to do this, because you guys have passed through some major moments in pop culture history.
Yes.
And but the closer for me was, you know, I asked them to do like the equivalent of a ride along, take me to this Compton, you know, because it existed, I guess, in theory for me.
Okay, yes.
And in the music, you know, I could act bad, you know. But I was like, let me see your Compton. And so, you know, I'd seen the maps of the gangs and everything. So they're riding me through the neighborhood, like, this is Nutty Block, you know, this is Acacia Block. I'm like, oh, okay, so now it's real. And then we stopped by someone's house.
Yeah.
You know, a guy who had just gotten out, and they didn't know he had gotten out, and he'd been in for 15 years. Wow. And this had been a gang member that they had run-ins back and forth with.
Wow.
But Tim still had a relationship with his mother.
Oh.
And dropped in on her on the regular because one of her sons had been murdered, and that's really kind of what got the other son into gangbanging. And Tim was still trying to solve the first son's murder, which had happened like in 90 or 92.
Wow.
And he was still going by this woman's house to assure her that. And so I'm thinking, where'd he do that at? You know?
right.
And then we're about to go there, and then Tim's musing, and he said, you know, I usually call her before I stop by. And I'm like, really? Where do they do that? And there was this deference that was there, and that's what closed me. Their relationship with the community. They cared about the people. They knew the people. They weren't just there, you know, arresting folks, hemming them up, and having no connection to it. They cared about that community.
Yeah.
So that closed me.
I like that. Now, you don't hear much about that very often either. You touched on so many different things, because, you know, for me, that time period, because right now we just had the 25th anniversary of the riots. And I don't know if you watched John Ridley's documentary, which was, I thought was beautifully done. Wonderfully done. And it took me right back to that whole time period. Some people nowadays just forget how L.A. was very volatile. And South L.A. was very volatile. That whole, like I said, in Compton, that whole area was such. I mean, parts of Long Beach I thought were kind of ghetto, too, weren't they back then also? Yeah. Parts of Long Beach.
North Snoop's Long Beach. From Long Beach also, North Long Beach.
And, so they had, so there's a lot of stuff going on back then. We forget how bad it really was. I mean, you guys are like survivors, so to speak. I'm a survivor. We're all survivors of that time period. I mean, it's kind of crazy when you think about it that way. But I mean, I knew all gangbangers, and I knew certain streets I couldn't walk on, and my grandmother got mugged several times. But I mean, like, it was just. But like you said, it was just regular stuff. Like she didn't like fall apart because she got mugged the first couple times. It was almost like you had to take a chance. I mean, she had to go to work and ride the bus. Back then, the RTD, back then, and ride the bus. I mean, it was a shame. It was just so bad like them.
Really, I'm telling you, most of the citizens of Compton are good.
Nice people, right.
But they were almost like imprisoned by the gangs, where they couldn't come out of their house. They couldn't be. They didn't want to be witnesses. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't want to get involved. And it took a long time for me and Tim to, you know, show up at crime scenes and make the effort, extra effort to go contact their people. When people got killed, to a lot of people, it was just a gangbanger getting killed. No, this gangbanger had a mother, mm-hmm. you know, and family. So, I mean, we used to go back and we used to talk to the family. You know, it's just a little, it doesn't take much to get to, you know, for a little extra effort to go a long way in a community. And that's what we tried to do.
That's what I said, because I knew people, because I knew the gang members from the other side, right? I knew them as friends that grew up. Some of them we went to camp together as kids, and they later got into the gangs. I didn't get into it. None of my brothers and I got into that stuff, but like they did. And they were still nice to me because they knew, like, my mom, my cousins, my grandma, they knew us. But they were gangbangers. And they were doing stuff that they were like my friends, kind of. I mean, I look back right now, it's kind of like, I mean, it's a weird thing. I mean, I was in school being straight. They make fun of me because I didn't call me Oreo. It's like I was always whatever. But I knew who they were, and they didn't bother us. But it was still this whole thing. It was still, I've been in shootouts. And I mean, it was bad.
Right.
It was really bad.
And you know, that's how it is sometimes, that, you know, with some cops who have seen it for so long, they're like, oh, well, it's back and forth, and, you know, it's their own little war. I mean, kind of the same way they looked at it in the 20s and 30s. It's all bad guys getting killed. Those bad guys all had moms, families, and everything else, and at one time were on the little league or whatever, like you said, you grew up with. And, you know, it used to help us so much in our careers just by going and sitting down and talking to the families when they're in that grief. And they're like, wow, no other cops have come here. And since the night he's been shot, I'm glad you guys are taking an interest. And even though they were afraid of retaliation, the sister or somebody would say, give me a number where I can call you and give you some information.
Yeah.
Right? And that they wanted to see something done, and there'd be another brother sitting there fuming, waiting to do something for his brother, and the mom and the rest of the family would be like, I don't want to see him, you know, getting killed or going to prison. Can you guys go do this? And then they would give us the information. We'd do our best to try to solve it.
And in the book, they use some great examples. I want you to read the book to get the examples. But some things I want to ask you, because I read some of these things, how did you guys not get super jaded? Like, as you said, some other cops just do. I mean, or people just do get jaded in situations like this. You're just like, you see it every day over and over again, every day over and over again. What kept you guys, like, above board trying to continue to help the community?
Well, it really is easy to get jaded. I mean, I've seen my peers just say, you know, F this.
Yes,
I'm tired of this. I don't want to deal with it anymore. But we just went about it on a day-to-day basis, you know. I mean, we loved our jobs, and we liked, you know, helping the community. That's what we thought we were doing. Mm-hmm. You know, even though we were trying to solve crimes, we later learned what we really had an impact on the community by taking a little extra effort to go and visit and talk to people. And I think that needs to be done more now.
Yes, I'm sure. And you talk about Chicago. We hear all these things reports about Chicago. How bad is there these days in some parts of Chicago?
Yeah, it's terrible. There's so many things that could be done that need to be done. But I mean, it's such a concerted effort. I mean, it has to be the community, to the police. I mean, there has to be, there's got to be a coming together to actually try to solve the problems, you know. I mean, and something needs to be done because it's a great city,
you know,
it shouldn't be divided south and north, you know. You just say you can only go on the north side of Chicago, don't go on the south side, and, you know, you might end up dead, you know. So something needs to be done, because, I mean, I love that city. I go back all the time. And
I do. I love it, too. I'll be there next month. I love Chicago.
And there's some great stuff on the south side. I mean, you can see the south side of the city. It's history and a lot of stuff there, you know, and it needs to be taken care of.
I agree with you. And as you're getting more into all these stories, were you just, like, devouring it all up? Just like, oh, my God. Like, was this, like, Christmas for you every day?
Absolutely.
Like, you know what I mean?
It reads like a novel because it felt like a novel to me. You know how people say things about truth is stranger than fiction. This, I have books where I've written some what I deem really over the top stuff.
Yeah.
Their stuff trumped mine.
It does trump
over
trust
the top.
Me, trust me.
And it wasn't just one moment like that. Yeah. It was moment after moment after moment after moment after moment after moment after moment where I'm winded, you know, just hearing about it or looking at you know, their documents and their source material. And it was, I just knew that there was just huge, incredible story there mm-hmm. that, you know, people needed to hear.
Yeah.
But they would be riveted by once they heard mm-hmm. it.
That's right. I read it in 2 days. Only reason why I read it in 2 days, not just one day, because I had to have some of life and like talk to my mother or something like that. I could get my mom, I'm busy. I'll see you in 2 days. So, I mean, I did take a couple of days. I mean, it just you keep reading the next thing. You're like, that happened, and then that happened, and then that. You're like, you just keep going. And then for me, because I have the added knowledge of being back at that time period, it kept transporting me back just to similar situations. Mm-hmm. I think anybody out there who's from South LA, or any, I think any kind of major crime-ridden city from that time period, it could be the Bronx, New York, it could be. I think you relate to this book because yeah. you're like, oh, okay. I mean, that I kind of remember similar things like that. But you get it from a cop's and detective's perspective that we don't see very often either, actually.
You don't see it very often. Mm-hmm. Or when you see it, it's the way we expect to see it. It's kind of yes. the criminals did this and this, yes. this. And it doesn't have as much of a personal feel. Mm-hmm. Whereas theirs is, to me, was much more of a human experience.
Yes. Yes.
And they saw the people that they were serving in the community as human beings. Mm-hmm. They weren't just, you know, perps or this or mm-hmm. bangers or whatever. They were people that they knew, mm-hmm. many of whom they'd known since they were kids. So they kind of all grew up together.
Yeah. And I kind of got that from the book. You treated us, and I will say, because mostly black folks.
That's how you have to look at it.
You treated us like regular folks. And I mean, I come from somewhat of a law enforcement family. I have uncles who are sheriffs and things, my stepdad and all them. But I've had bad run-ins with the police, of course, like any other black man in Los Angeles of a certain age. I'm close to 50. I had problems back in the day, and I was never involved in that stuff. But I saw reading your book, it was like, you guys really did seem to care and want to get to the root of things. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, I mean, it was like, you know, treat people the way you want to be treated. I mean, and you can go so far with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've sat down with detectives that are hulking over somebody and, yes. you know, listen, you better, you know, and basically talking down or yelling at mm-hmm. somebody. I'm like, why not sit down and, you know, like you see a picture on the wall of, you know, their kid plays baseball or whatever, start talking about that. You know, get something to relate to. And then not only that, but I mean, people open up and you can have a great conversation. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, they're saying, you know, hey, I shouldn't have done it. Yeah, I shouldn't have gotten that car. But yeah, this is what happened.
You know? I was going to say that because you bring up a good point. In anything in life, you catch more flies, you know, they say, honey, whatever, bees, whatever that saying is. You know what I'm talking about. But like, why don't you talk with people at a regular level? You'll get more out of them, won't you?
There are detectives I have met that I look up to, and the way we adopted to work this stuff, and it's just that's all it is. It's a personal basis. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, sit down and what are you cooking? It smells good, you know.
Yes, okay.
You got an extra plate or something. Yeah, whatever it takes. I mean, you know, right. And it's just being real. You know, just go in and just be real.
It's common sense, because why would you talk to somebody and start up here?
Right, right.
Now, you know, if you start here and then the person you're talking yes. to wants to take it up another yeah. level. Another level.
That's
then you got to do what you got to do. But why start up here? There's nowhere to go.
I agree with you.
It's kind of like common sense.
Right. Well, not everybody has common sense. Yeah. I mean, you're saying you have common sense. Everybody has common sense.
And I love that you touched on, you know, the way they are with us. Because,
mm-hmm.
like you said, these are, you know, typically communities of color. And mm-hmm. that was a big draw for me. I mean, okay. you know, you can look at me and tell I'm a little bit Afrocentric.
You know, kind of.
Just a wee bit.
Just a little smidge.
And we've talked about this before, but we've talked about it before, but I hate white savior stories. I hate them.
Me too.
And Hollywood loves the white savior stories.
Me too. Sorry about
that. I'll never watch The Help because of that. You know?
Me either. I didn't watch it either. Sorry.
Can't watch it. And so, on its, I guess, on the surface, their story, you know, when I kept hearing yeah. all the different things that they've been involved in, and mm-hmm. you know, and the part that we didn't touch on yet is that, you know, Compton's 10.2 square miles, and they were appointed to basically run the gang unit. You know, they
yes,
had a boss. There was just the two of them, and there were 55 gangs. So on its on the surface, two white cops.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Gangs.
Yeah.
It was the whitest white savior story to ever white.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't know if I could do this. But then I got to know yeah. them, and these are good men.
Yeah.
You know, I have
white.
A tremendous amount of regard for them
yeah.
because of their. They never lost their humanity. They never stopped seeing. On the other side of the table, behind bars, whatever, they never stopped seeing another human being that mm-hmm. could, but for the grace of God, be them. Mm-hmm. You know, Tim would still go back to prison to put people who mm-hmm. he put away.
Yeah.
You know, who understood, like, I knew you just doing your job, man, mm-hmm. do what you had to do. And he still go see him. So, again, where they do that at? So, you know, and considering what we're facing or what we're seeing so much of on, you know, on the national landscape now where it's kill first, never ask any questions.
Yes.
The type of policing that they were doing, you know, up until they retired, that kind of thing needs to be taught all around the country or all around the world.
I agree.
Where you have a relationship, you know the people that you serve, because it is serving a community.
Okay, I'm glad you said that, because that's something that, and I would love to hear you guys hear about this, because nowadays we're seeing there are just police.
Right.
They're not, they're to protect and serve us, and I feel like they're not in many cases. Mm-hmm. And, and what are your thoughts about the, we're talking 25 years later, we're still talking about this.
Right.
I mean,
let me say one thing. It's kind of like I wanted to add to what she said. I mean, we kind of had it pretty good in Compton, because we came from a, you know, it was a bigger city, almost 100,000 by the time we left.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it seemed like a small city to us, where we knew people in the community. That's where we, you know, took our cars to get worked on, or, you know, you stop at the market, get something to eat, whatever. Mm-hmm. And we learned from the guys that came ahead of us, and a lot of them that were from Compton, grew up in Compton, mm-hmm. and those are the guys that are, like, teaching the other cops come in and then take you over, like, hey, we're going to stop at this house over here, having a barbecue. And some of that, and that's kind of where you get that, where you're part of the community. And it is much harder with some of the larger agencies and stuff, and they're moving around, and there's just too many cops and not enough localized ones that actually have some kind of a relationship with that community. And we were lucky enough to be trained by a lot of great cops that grew up in Compton.
Oh, okay. Okay. So that was an advantage for you then.
Definitely.
Because my, you know, because for me, it's just like, all we know is that the police are supposed to be there to protect us. And I always feel like the gang members, many times, the ones that I knew, were all about codes and respect. So I figure if you do talk to them a certain way, even though they are doing bad stuff, they probably wouldn't respect you on some odd level, right? So you're able to actually, like you said, you're trying to protect the neighborhood, but you're also trying to talk to them too, and things like, must be really interesting then.
Well, yeah. I mean, it is all about respect. That's their code. Everything they do revolves around respect. Mm-hmm. And when you go to deal with these guys, if you go in there and just diss them and treat them and throw them around and take them to jail for every little thing, you know, that you lose your respect. Our job as gang officers back then was to build up a rapport. Yeah, if they did something wrong, shot somebody or had you know, weapons or whatever, we're going to deal with them. But we would talk to them first, you know what I mean? We would go on the corner, we'd jack them up, we'd talk to them, and we try to build up a rapport. They get to know us, we get to know them, because later on, when you realize, when you do have them there and you have to interview them, that's where the respect, oh yeah, you didn't diss me, you always showed us respect, so I'll talk to you guys. And a lot of times they won't do that they get disrespected all the time.
So, okay, why you two? Why are you guys the ones that kind of moved up into the whole gang thing? Was it because you were talented? They said, you hear about these two can, you know, do this? I mean, how did that work for you guys?
You know, it's kind of funny, because it started out more because we were aggressive and we got to know these guys, because it happened to coincide when we started was when the rock cocaine hit. That's when you had the, I mean, 15, 20 gang members on a corner and, you know, girlfriends, and then some of the hangers-on that might just be selling drugs. Cars lined up to buy drugs everything.
Yes.
So the rock houses. So we got a little reputation from the gangs, because they look at it just, you know, they'll look at a little rep to a cop too, saying, wow, you know, that guy chased me for a mile, man, and through a window and everything else, and he was serious, right? So, I mean, you kind of, you know, there were times we would, you know, same gangster rap, so, you know, a few years later was coming in at that time, and they'd be rapping a song by the time we walked by, you know, with the guy, you know, talking about, oh, little Oak just got caught by, you know, whatever, for slinging, you know, and it was just, you earn a reputation that way, and then it kind of got us into the gang, because we were, you know, catching the guys that were doing a lot of the big crimes, and then they got to kind of noticed after, you know, with the Blondie thing and everything that came later, and then, you know, they didn't know a certain cop by name or something to talk to, and they're thinking, well, all I did was ride in a stolen car. It's not that big of a deal, but I don't want to go to jail.
Right.
But I was out there last night when that murder happened, so who can I talk to? Right. Oh, yeah, Blondie, have him come in. Yeah, okay. Blondie and Lad, right? Have him come in and talk to us, right? And then we started solving crimes like that because people just got to know us. And so, I mean, you have to earn respect and then and give some respect, and then that's how it works.
Right. Now, I want to touch a little bit on the Tupac stuff because, again, it's 21 years later, we're still talking about it. I've also interviewed people. I've interviewed Alonzo Williams, who you did in WWE. I've interviewed him. I've interviewed other folks that are part of the whole hip-hop early days and stuff. So I want to know about that a little bit because I want to know what is your, for people out there, when I read the book or anything, what is your position on the Tupac murders? On a murder? That it's just a gang-related thing? Or people think it's conspiracies and all kinds of stuff. What is your position on that?
Well, I mean, our position from the beginning, from our investigation that we did, was that it was a straight thing about respect again.
Okay.
One person gets disrespected at a mall where they try to take his chain. They see some of the guys involved in that later, and they disrespect him by beating him down. And then they went back to get their revenge in. And then on the way back, they happened to run into the people they were looking for anyway and just lit up the car. And that it was a simple gang-related thing, one respect, disrespect to another, and a payback, just be behind that. And that's what we said back in the week of Tupac's murder, and what we said in the affidavit back then, and it's still has actually been proven more by other interviews over the years and other people that have wrote books and over the years have kind of proven that we were right back then.
Well, that's why I bring it up, because a lot of people have written books and stuff. There's a lot of stuff out there. Right. And as you guys touch upon on here, I want to make sure your position is kind of known. People read the book, of course, and get more details, but I want to know what your position was kind of on that, because people think he's in Palm Springs with Elvis. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that goes on out there. It's like, maybe he is. I don't know. Sure, if he comes walking through the door with Elvis, I'll take Elvis too. Why not? Bring them both back. But there's also people who just say that it's much more... That it was more towards Suge Knight. It was more. What are your thoughts on that?
We heard all the conspiracy theories, and when you think about it, this Suge Knight, you know, was worth at the time over $300 million, and you know he's going to pay someone to kill him, and kill Tupac when he's sitting in the seat right next to him, and say, okay, he could kill Tupac a million different ways, but he's going to have someone drive up and shoot in the car 10 times, but hey, don't hit me. And he got grazed in the head. He's lucky he didn't die.
Yeah, he didn't get grazed.
It's further backed up our story that you'll read in the book. It gives a day-by-day depiction that what went on from Vegas back to Compton with all the players involved, and we back it up by the war that happened between Southside Crips and the Mob Pyrus after the incident. Mm-hmm. And that wouldn't have happened unless, you know, they were involved.
So. Now, for you, doing that part of the book, did you go in already with your own theories about Tupac, or was the death, or was this all open for you? When did you...
I had heard most of the various theories. And, you know, they were just kind of that for me, like, oh, yeah, whatever, you know. And then you think about the stuff like the Illuminati and all
that. Yeah,
that
y'all know, too.
And I'm a, you know, at my core, I'm a journalist.
Yes,
you are. You know, I want to know the facts. I want to know the details. You know, show it to me. Let me see it. And their take was very full of show it to me. It was full of details. They were there in the trenches. You know, they'd known the players, again, some of them since they were kids.
Yeah.
And so they had things that were what Shakespeare calls ocular proof to me.
Okay.
And the things that weren't there were circumstantial enough or probable enough to make me go, yeah, if A plus B, you know, equals C, and... It was math. It was simple math. I'm not great at math, but it was the kind of math I could do. That made sense to me. You know, the whole disrespect one, disrespect all. And this was a chain reaction of disrespect that it started, you know, with a fight at the ball, you know, picks up in Vegas. We kick somebody's behind, then they retaliate in Vegas. And then everybody came back to Compton. In the wake of what happened in Vegas, in the wake of that shooting, they were the two guys that were dealing with the war, you know, them and the Compton Police Department, but they were the ones having to chase behind all of the retaliations that were happening for the weeks that followed, you know, and the players. And they were getting, you know, word on the street. Mm-hmm. You know, because the streets talk about people who are bragging about about doing it.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff made sense to me.
Do we know the killers? I mean, you know who did it?
We think we did.
I was asking people if they know. Yeah, people say they think they know, but
it's all spelled out in the book.
Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah. So I mean, it's just I feel like we're still talking about it 21 years later. It's so interesting that people. I mean, now he's mythologized on some level, obviously, but mm-hmm. just like we're doing, and that and Biggie too. I don't want to leave him out of the way, but him too, because obviously that happened to him after. I mean, it's all connected. That part I saw for sure. I was like. That Tupac, those things are obviously completely connected, and that's when it all stopped. It seemed like after that, I was like, okay, now on the larger levels, like we can't do this anymore. Isn't that funny? But the streets were still going on, though. There was still stuff of chain reaction happening, right?
There was after Tupac's murder. Yeah, yeah, there was definitely back and forth payback shootings going on every day, every night. We were. Working a lot of hours back then, and then trying to compile an affidavit to hit 40 houses and slow it all down and try to get some people named and some people in custody. That's when we arrested Baby Lane, suspected in Tupac's murder, and many of the other persons on both sides from the mob and South Side that were in. So, I mean, it kept going on for quite a while, but once we did that big search warrant, it kind of slowed things down, and that's what we kind of used to do in Compton, try to slow the pace, right? A lot of
stop
people getting woke
so
up with battering and rams and everything else at 4 o'clock in the morning. Well, that kind of, someone in that family's going to say, I don't know what you're doing, but stop it.
Yeah.
I don't want that stuff happening in my house anymore, right? Yeah. So it seems that somebody will get somebody to say, that's enough.
Yeah.
And it slows down quite a bit.
And so you guys are part of the whole riot. You were around for the riots, too. Well, you guys were called in because you guys were at Compton. It happened near my house on Florence and Norman, that area. But you guys came. And it's so funny. My friend of mine was like, yeah, I rode by the other day. And it's a small intersection. But when he showed all the aerial footage, looked really big. I said, yeah, it's not really that big. It's just a regular intersection in L.A. I mean, it's not anything big. But so you guys were part of all that, too, then. I mean, they had to call everybody in, didn't they, basically, back then?
Oh, yeah. South Central's not really all that close to Compton.
Right, no, right.
Right.
Where
it all started.
Right.
But it all flowed down into Watts and Compton and North Long Beach. So we were working that night and driving around, and we heard, all the gangsters going, hey, they were waving us down. You guys better be careful. We heard it's going down. It's going down. They were warning us.
Wow.
And then they all called. They called it once it started. They called us all into the station, and when the sergeants, the call came in 134th and Wilmington. It's like the border of L.A.
Yeah,
and
I know Compton
up there. And they said there's looting going on in a store in there. So they actually sent Tim and I out there to investigate what was going on. That's what we kind of laughed. We were walking out. We said, what are we, the Expendables here? Or what? So we went out there, and then they were looting, and so we...
But were there any concerns because they were going against any white person? I mean, they're going against white cops. They were just going crazy against white people. Was there any worry for you?
You know, we were so... so probably so used to things happening around Compton that it was like, wow, this is a new one. But I don't think we were too much heightened, because it's kind of like... We always, believe it or not, had some kind of a relationship with our gangs in Compton.
Okay.
Where, like I said, the whole thing, everybody knows somebody and all that kind of stuff. And we, over the years had a few guys shoot at us and all that kind of stuff, but it was few and far between.
Okay.
We didn't really have the fear that the Compton gang members were coming to get us at that time, but they were definitely, when the news was broadcasting everything else is going on, they were going to get theirs too. And they were organized and they started hitting all those places, and they realized that we're outnumbered, we can only do so much.
And
you try to do something, but it's like, you're just scratching the surface, We I'm sure everybody's, fear level went up a little bit, but I think we just were probably so tired from working 18, 20-hour days and stuff that we hardly thought about it.
And you were younger, too.
Yeah, we were younger.
You're younger. There's a lot of things don't pay
for. Yeah, we're 20s, 30s,
you're
invincible, right?
There are a lot of things I wouldn't do now that I did back in my 20s, trust and believe. But you bring up a good point. And people out there, if you get a map one day, you look at it, because I have friends from Downey, and I'm like, you're closer to Compton than I was. in a sense, like, geographically. Right. They're just on the other side. Like, literally, you're on the other side. Southgate, down there. That's on that side. And I'm like, I'm kind of further down by the water. Right. No, I mean, I'm like Silver City in Westchester. I'm like, so, I mean, but so I'm glad you said that. We weren't that close. We're on the same side of town, but we weren't that close. I mean, it was a large geographic area between that.
Right. Well, by the second day of the riots, I think we were the only car driving the 91 freeway heading towards the smoke. Everyone else is heading away from that. And there weren't too many cars going into that, you know. So.
Yeah, it was crazy. I still have just two corner stores on my corners that are still not here. And that's 25 years later. They're still empty lots. And I grew up with those stores, and they're gone. And it's kind of that's the lasting impact that has still had. Do you remember the riots at all? Did you remember seeing it on TV?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Because at the time that happened, I had just moved to Montgomery, Alabama.
Oh, wow.
Like a few months before it happened. And watched all that stuff. You know, I was riveted because I worked for the KinderCare Corporation back then.
Okay.
And I worked out of their corporate office, and I had national jurisdiction for what I was doing. And so we were making sure to keep an eye on the centers that we had here to see if they were impacted by it at all. But yeah, followed it all very closely. Just, you know, from you know, as an African American, it mattered.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it did, didn't it? Now, one of the last parts of the book, basically, we talk about how you guys, there's no Compton PD. It was shut down. Like, who does that? Like, how does that happen? And it's amazing, and you're part of it.
Trying to ponder that.
But I want to touch upon, because there was a lot of corruption, we find out, between that and Rodney King. I mean, everything, all kinds of stuff. There was a lot of corruption happening in our police systems in Southern California. And so it seems that Compton was not immune to that also, right?
Right. Every police department has their bad apples. We had our bad apples, but as far as losing the Compton Police Department, I don't think it really had to do with any corruption within the police department. It had to do with City Hall. But once they made their move to try to get a hold of the PD so they can run and tell our chief what to do, they put him, you know, he wouldn't do it, so they put him off. And they put two 30-year veterans, black officer, a captain, who we respected a lot. And we didn't feel it was right. So at that time, Tim and I said, hey, we're going to try to take the police union and fight City Hall.
Yeah, so you try to fight City Hall.
You know, what's the story of that?
Yeah,
right?
So
that's kind of in a nutshell.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all in
it's
the
all
book.
It's all in the book. You'll see all the details.
We tried to fight City Hall, we lost.
And that was something that really drew me in, because
I'm
like, really?
You're going to go fight City Hall? I don't want to fight City Hall. That's crazy.
Because we were like a little family. It was around for 112 years, our police department. Wow. And we were devastated, man. We still are.
Yeah,
we still talk about it.
118 years.
Yeah.
Since
1888,
it had been in existence.
Wow. I mean, you can read the books and stuff, but it's like, to me, I'm incredulous by that.
That's what got me, because I had never heard of anything like that happening before, and again, in a department that had existed since 1888, and then all of a sudden it's like, I'm going to make you go away. And then it never came back. It's been policed by the Sheriff's Department ever since.
It's crazy. We can talk about it a little bit. Like, what do you think? Why is it not back? Is it a color issue? Is it an area issue?
And there was an attempt to bring it back. Eric Paradin tried to bring it back like a couple of years ago.
Go ahead.
Eric Paradin was one of our officers and became a assistant district attorney and still is, and ran for mayor of Compton. Too late for us, because Eric was with us at the council meetings all the time when we were fighting the mayor and the council trying to, you know, save the department. And Eric finally ran against the person I'm not even going to name that put us out, who was the mayor at that time. And he tried to bring the police department back. There was a funds issue.
Okay.
You know, some people like the sheriff's department. Some people like the local Compton department. There was just a lot of issues. And it's one of the things that was hard for a smaller agency to compete with a bigger agency. I mean, of course, the smaller agency's got the knowing people in the community, had been there for years, and not going to work there 6 months and then move on to another city.
Okay.
You know, but the larger agency can supply so many things that the smaller agents can see can't. I mean, if there's a major thing that happens in Compton, well, they can call from all these cities around to bring all these extra resources to the city to help out on a major event.
Yeah.
Something that we couldn't do. You know, I think they really lost with the, because I think the bigger issue is the community and the community trust and the community knowing people on the department that are kind of looking out for their interests and are there all the time. Even though there's some really good sheriff's detectives and deputies that are there.
I'm sure.
It's just they move on. That's part of the sheriff's department or LAPD or any large agency. You move, work a certain area for a while, and then, well, I'm going to go, I've had enough of this. I'm running like crazy. You know, I'm going to go over to Cerritos or somewhere where I'm going to, you know, be at Starbucks more than I'm at crime scenes. You know, so, I mean, that kind of stuff happens. But, I mean, it was sad to us because, you know, and the main thing that we started the fight was because the... The, you know, officers they put out, the chief and the captain, I mean, they were, one of them was Eric Paradin's brother, Percy Paradin, and one was Huey Taylor. And Huey's the one that got us into the gang unit, even against other people saying, you know, well, you're putting these two white guys in here, you know, I mean, don't you think, you know, we should have someone else in there too?
Yeah.
And he always he said, well, hey, man, they're out there doing it.
Yeah.
If I need them to solve a crime, they'll be there and they'll do it. Yeah. And it wasn't right the way they put them off. You know, they lied about them, and we said, you know, hey, we'll fight this to the end. And unfortunately, it was the end of Compton PD.
Right. Yeah, it was the end.
Literally.
It was literally the end. Like, it was the end. And that's, I mean, like I said, there's more, there's all these details in the book about that. So you two, the question for you two is, did she do the job you want her to do on this book?
Oh my God.
Because she accomplished what you wanted.
Right from the get go, we knew that Lo got it. She knew it wasn't just even though she was up on the hip hop scene, it wasn't a story about just Tupac and Biggie. It was more than that. She got it right away. And yeah, we supplied the stories, but we're cops, you know, we write in chronological order. And I go, how are we going to get a story out of this, man? And she did such a fabulous job, such a great job, I can't even explain. I should have taken my piggyback.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as we met her, as soon as we left, we said, yeah, man, she's it. She totally gets the story because, you know, again, every time we tell the story to somebody, we were, you know, thinking, maybe we'll get another author to work with us or something, or try to sell something here and there. And it was like everybody, oh, yeah, we'll tell the Tupac story. We'll tell Biggie Smalls or something. It's like, no, there's a bigger story. I mean, there was N.W.A., there was, you know, there was Suge Knight, Death Row, the riots, officers getting killed. I said, there's so many things happening in Compton, and there was the story of, you know, how the cops dealt with the community in Compton that hasn't been told. And she totally got that. I mean, she repeated back to us as soon as we talked for a minute exactly what she thought the story was. And we kind of looked at each other. It's like, this is what we've been trying to tell everybody.
She totally gets it. That's great.
So, and she did a fantastic job. Yeah.
That's great.
Come on, girl. That's good.
Well, those come. Some people, you know, some collaborations are just like that. And you meet people and you collab, and it just works out perfectly. And that's what it does. So you guys are retired, right?
Yes, we are.
Do you miss it?
Yeah, we do, but... Some things we don't miss, but a lot of things we miss, the camaraderie with the guys that we had and we worked with. That's what I miss the most. I don't know about Tim, but we really do.
Like you said, we really miss all the guys. I mean, we worked with some great cops in Compton and really great people and that are still doing good things. And, you know, even though I still get calls sometimes from guys I know in the community or something, they'll, hey, you know, so-and-so just killed so-and-so. And I'll say, well, you know, I've been retired a couple of years now, right? You know? But I say, don't worry, I'll pass it on. And so I kind of feel like I'm still in there a little because I'll talk to Sheriff's Homicide times a year and say, hey, I just got a call. This is supposedly your guy and this is supposedly where he's hiding out or whatever. And this is what it was all about. So I feel like we're still in it like that. And then with the book, kind of brings us back into it. But besides that, retirement life, life is wonderful.
You guys are kind of young, though. I'm looking at both of you going, yeah. Come on.
We retired a few months apart, and we just kind of both knew it was time. Yeah. I don't know how to explain it.
So you guys didn't discuss it first, but like you just decided, and then you said, it's interesting.
We
really
did. We each did 32 years.
Yeah. Okay, that's good.
So, you know, we figured that's enough.
But they said it's at the same time.
I was going to say to you that they're like an unmarried couple.
Yeah.
So, and they just did it.
You just did it at the same time. Crazy. Oh my God, I love it. That's so funny. Well, thank you for all your years of service. I mean, thank like you. Serena's book, she did. It was a human interest story.
That's what it was for me.
That's what I got of it.
That's absolutely what it was for me.
It's exactly what I got out of this book. So great job for doing this. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Could there be a police officer? I don't know. I just bad at people who do that because we need policing. We need police. And we need good ones. You're two examples of good ones. There were good ones out there. They're not all bad. So pick up this book. I'm telling you, you'll read it. You'll probably read it in one day. You know what's going on. But you'll read it. It's a really good book. It's called What's My Time in Compton? Yes. And it's still relevant today. I think if you read it now, it's still relevant today. Very much so. Thank you guys for being on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. This is Book Circle Online. You can follow us on iTunes and on YouTube under Book Circle Online. On Twitter, we have a Twitter page. It's Book Circle On. So not those are online there. We're Books Are Online on Instagram and Facebook. I'm James Lott Jr. all over the universe. Just type my name in and I'll pop up. Not at your house, but I'll pop up somewhere on the internet and you can follow me there. If you want more of this conversation, contact me. You want to get in contact with them, contact me and I'll lead you the right direction. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next time.
From managing editor Jason Squamata, executive producers Maria Menounos, Phil Svitek, and Kevin Undergaro, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Book Circle Online. For more discussion, go to bookcircleonline.com. And if you have comments, questions, or book title suggestions, write us at info@bookcircleonline.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this is Book Circle Online. BCO. Join the circle.